I think a good way to describe us Americans is to say that we are people of the lifestyle. A lot of people, there are millions of people that envy us, the American lifestyle. There's a lot of countries that look at us and say, boy, look at that. That's something else. And I don't know if it ever dawns on us how that our lifestyle cuts us off or gets in the way of really knowing God, knowing God's will. It takes a lot to maintain a lifestyle. It really does. It takes a lot of energy, a lot of work. And we know that the first commandment says not to have any other gods before me. No gods before the real God. And I sometimes think, and it's also been said, if you can keep that first commandment, all the rest will just sort of fall into place. But I sometimes think we overlook, I know I have, that maybe one of the greatest gods that I have in my life is lifestyle. People of the lifestyle. And I did a image search and typed in the word lifestyle. And boy, I got a lot of magazines on the subject of lifestyle. This one here is about, you know, your home, your kitchen, the way, the decor of your kitchen, your home, you know, how it looks, the right kind of furniture, the right kind of everything. That can occupy a lot of our time. We seem to be concerned about that. I know I am. And none of these things in and of themselves are wrong, but when you put them all together, they represent a lifestyle. Here's another one, a holiday home lifestyle. And it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, we all have our lifestyles that we maintain and expect. Here's another lifestyle, I guess, magazine, fashion, lipsticks, lipstick, I can't say that word, dress, clothing, lifestyle. And here was another one, top 10 lifestyle and leisure business ideas in 2006. You know, I want a lifestyle where there's a lot of leisure involved, a lot of times to relax and enjoy life. Lifestyle. Oh, and here's something very good. Boys' toys, if you want to call them that. In fact, I think that's a Impala right over there. I like this one. Lifestyle. But something more to occupy our time. Something that we can work at. Something we can spend more time doing, participating, maintaining our lifestyle. And that one right there really describes the American lifestyle. I mean, it revolves around money. And I don't know how many people ever really think about this, that the concept of freedom from your bondage to money, that, you know, the Israelites, they had a 7-year release where all that bondage was sort of cut loose. But the American lifestyle is not like that. I mean, it's 30-year mortgages. It's in bondage to this right here, money, for the rest of your life. And I wonder sometimes if we think about what we could do if we were freed up. You know, what could we do for God if we were just freed up from that bondage? Of course, credit. I was at, we were at Disneyland one time, and a woman in front of me, she was buying 2 Mickey Mouse ears ice cream. You know, they look like Mickey Mouse ears. They're real, and boy, they're good. They're hard as a rock, too. I mean, you can just, it's the only ice cream you can chew on. I mean, it's they really deep freeze these things. And the lady in front of me got 2 of them, and she pulled out a credit card. And I'm thinking to myself, a credit card? Here, let me just loan you $5 and pay for that, and you can go ahead and get out of the way. I mean, speed things up. People, credit card is for everything today. The simplest of things. Put it on credit. I'll worry about paying it later. Then there's health and lifestyle. Now, that's a big subject. We're concerned about our health. I mean, looking good, feeling better. That occupies a lot of our life, health. And then there's lifestyle fitness center. You got to stay fit. And then there's the fantasy lifestyle. You know, thinking of maybe I could go to Hawaii and retire in Hawaii, or this is Florida right here. But the fantasy lifestyle, what we hope for, what we dream about. And then there's the lifestyle of looking good. There's nothing wrong with that. Someone said even an old barn looks better with a fresh coat of paint on it. And you know, I mean, it does. I mean, anything can be improved. And none of these things are wrong in and of themselves. But they represent a way of life. They represent lifestyle. And you would think when you get older, we would mature and sort of realize, loosen up on this lifestyle idea, you know. But guess what the most important thing you think about as you get older? Lifestyle. Where am I going to live? Who's going to take care of me? Will Social Security be enough money to survive on? We really get preoccupied with lifestyle as we get older. Now, I think this little statement represents you and I. Living like kings in Satan's kingdom. You ever thought about that? Living like kings in Satan's kingdom. This is a couple statistics here. It says that the living standard of the average welfare recipient in America ranks within the average living standard of the top 10 countries in the world. What that means is this, that the poor in America are actually better off than the middle class people of over 240 other nations. The poor in America are actually better off than the middle class people of over 240 other nations. Here's another statistic. The average American cat eats better than at least 1 billion people on our planet. The average American cat eats better than 1 billion people on our planet. You know, I have a rabbit, and I don't know why we have a rabbit, but I'm always kidding Teresa. I said, Teresa, that rabbit is eating better than we do. I mean, it's the you know, nothing in the refrigerator, nothing in the cabinets, and I'll go out to the little rabbit cage, and she's got him treats. I mean, you wouldn't believe, some of this stuff looks good. I'm thinking about the little nut balls, you know, the little special little color things, and I always kid her. I said, Teresa, the rabbit's eating better than we are. But this is fascinating here. I want to read to you something from Steve Gallagher. I like the way he writes. He sort of just nails people to the floor. He says, we in America enjoy a standard of living that truly has more luxury, pleasure, and comfort than any king has ever enjoyed in the history of the world. No king of the past has ever enjoyed indoor plumbing, electricity, television, newspapers, toasters, automobiles, ambulance service, telephones, and all the other things we now consider necessities in life. We live like kings, but often forget that God's kingdom isn't of this world. This is the kingdom of Satan, and its allurements are his rewards. We have become accustomed to such a high standard of living that we have allowed ourselves to become convinced that we must sustain it at all costs. We have allowed the things of this world to dominate our hearts. Since the flesh has been so pampered and catered to, we have no power to deny its passions. Our lives are ruled by the lusts of the flesh. Our lives are ruled by the lust of the flesh. And there's a reason for that. It's the American lifestyle. People of the lifestyle. Now, you ever heard the expression, get a life? You need to get a life. You know, now that may be true for some people, but I tell you, we got a life. We've got a life. In fact, we got a lifestyle. More than a life, we have a lifestyle. And it's pure hell to maintain that lifestyle. You ever notice that? It's hard to maintain it. Lifestyle is not what we are, it's what we do. We're about maintaining a lifestyle. And our lifestyle is, we live like kings, living in Satan's kingdom. I know some people wouldn't want to admit that. But just like a spoiled brat wouldn't want to admit that, you know, something's, you know, you're a spoiled brat. No, not me. And then there's the deserving. I deserve the American lifestyle. I deserve a functional family system. I deserve romance. I deserve a husband, a wife. I deserve income. I deserve $25 an hour. And you know, we look around at all the lifestyle that's out there, and I deserve this. And if I don't get it, well, I'll show you, God. I'll show you, world. I'll go out and do something crazy because I deserve the American lifestyle. I hate that deserving spirit. Maintaining the lifestyle. Maintaining the lifestyle. Teresa and I were talking about, she was saying, you know, I sort of get tired of being so busy. You know, with school and, you know, let's go to school. Pick Rebecca up. Take her to this. Take her to that. Let's do this. Let's do that. You know, it's just, she says, I like to just stay at home and do nothing. And I like to stay at home and do nothing. I mean, it's the maintaining of a lifestyle. One minister told about a answering machine that his neighbor had. And I'm not repeating this exactly, but it went something like this. It says, you've reached the so-and-sos. We may be at soccer practice. We may be at volleyball practice. We may be at little league practice. We may be at the Girl Scouts. We may be at the Boy Scouts. We may be at the PTA meeting. Or we may have just gone crazy. But if you leave your name and number, we may get back in touch. Can our lifestyles cut us off from God? That's the question. Can lifestyle cut you off from God? Understanding God, understanding God's will, understanding God's purpose for your life. Lifestyle. Well, there was a man, a rich young ruler, that came to Jesus and he said, what good thing must I do to have eternal life? And Jesus said to him, well, if you'll be perfect, go and sell all that you have, give to the poor, and come and follow me. But when the young man heard this saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Now, if you're thinking that this rich man couldn't leave because of money, you're wrong. You know, if God came to you and you knew it was God, that's the key point. You knew it was God and he said, sell it off and follow me. You'd do it in a heartbeat if you knew it was God asking you. His problem was not money. His problem was responsibility. He couldn't walk away from the responsibility that he had. He had too much responsibility. We think of responsibility as a good thing, and being responsible is. But do you know you can have too much responsibility? Way too much. You know, if you're a business owner and you have three people that work under you, you know what responsibility that is. Suppose you had 500 working under you. And every day they come up to you and they say, where are we working? I'm totally dependent on you. Tell me what to do. My wife, my children depend on you giving me a job. Suppose you had 500 that worked under you. It was the responsibility he couldn't walk away from. Because responsibility was his lifestyle. He had accepted a lifestyle of too much responsibility. And that's a choice that we make. What price are you willing to pay for success? Then there was another man who said, Lord, suffer me first to go bury my father. Jesus said, let the dead bury the dead. That's a fascinating statement. I love that statement. It sounds almost cruel. Let the dead bury the dead, buddy. Hey, that's my father you're talking about. And another said to him, Lord, I will follow you wherever you bid me to go. But first let me say goodbye to my family. You know, I want to have a going away party, a family reunion before I head off with you. Jesus said, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom. Here were people who had a lifestyle of, hey, priorities come first. Look, man, look, family comes first before you, Jesus. Priorities come first. That's a lifestyle. Family coming first. Another person, Lord, I will follow thee wherever you go. Jesus comes along and says, he answers that question. He says to this man and said, I'll follow you, Lord. He said, foxes have holes. Foxes have a hole. They have a home to live in. It's a hole in the ground. And you can picture the Disneyland, you know, imagery there of the fox in the hole, and he's got a little fireplace going, and he's sitting on the couch, and they got the pillows and the beds and all that. You know, they've got a home. And birds of the air have a nest, and that's their home. But the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Now, it never dawned on me that if you lived back then and you would have walked up to Jesus and said, "Christ, tell me about your lifestyle." He would have said, "What? What's a lifestyle? What are you talking about? Lifestyle?" If you would have walked up to any of the apostles, the Apostle Paul, "Tell me about your lifestyle you're living now." He would have said, "What? Lifestyle? I don't know what you're talking about." Peter, the early church, you know, lifestyle, it's something we get sucked into. We like to kid ourselves. One day, Peter was trying to kid himself, and he said, "Lord, I will lay down my life for your sake. I'll lay it down right now." Jesus answered him, "Will you lay down your life for my sake? Verily I say unto you, the cock shall not crow till you have denied me twice." Three times. And we know what happened. Now, I really don't think that God wants us to lay down our life in the sense of die for him. That may not be necessary. But if we're spending 24/7 to maintain a lifestyle, it's time to quit kidding ourselves. It's really time to quit kidding ourselves about our relationship with God. If we're spending 24/7 trying to maintain a lifestyle, it's time to quit kidding ourselves. People of the lifestyle. I want to turn to Psalm 17 and verse 8. Psalm 17 and verse 8. Here, David makes a clear distinction between himself and people of the lifestyle. David recognized also that there were people of the lifestyle. And he makes a clear distinction between him as a Christian and people of the lifestyle. 17 in verse 8, he says, "Keep me as the apple of your eye, hide me under the shadow of your wings. From the wicked that oppress me, from my deadly enemies who compass me about. They are enclosed in their own fat." They. Who's they? People of the lifestyle. "They are enclosed in their own fat. With their mouths they speak proudly." Have you ever noticed that America is what I call physically and spiritually fat? I once was going to give a sermon on that. This is from Newsweek magazine. It says, "Fat for Life. 6 million kids are seriously overweight in America." 6 million. Can you believe that? 6 million. Republican presidential candidate and self-described recovering foodaholic Mike Huckabee said, "Today we hear a lot about the war on terror, how we need to fight it. Let me ask this question. Who's going to fight it in the future if we're a generation so sick that we don't have the capacity to show up for work?" Huckabee said that statistics disturb him. "You've got a serious situation with a generation of kids coming up so unhealthy they won't be able to pass the military physical." Now, one of the reasons that we are like this is because we're lazy. And this is what I would call, this is supposed to be called walking your dog. The only thing that's walking is the dog here. But it says, we keep talking about the war on terror. Who's going to fight it if we don't have enough people who are healthy enough to show up and pick up a backpack? You know, that's a powerful statement there. And, you know, what's the number one killer in America, or one of the number one killers? It is the heart that is clogged up with, you know, too much cholesterol. And I think there's just a similarity here between, you know, the way that we are as a nation. But God comes along and says, "Make the heart of the people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they should see with their ears, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and be converted and heal them." The kind of concern that God has is with our spiritual condition. That if we get lazy spiritually, if we adopt a lifestyle where it's all about us, where there is laziness, complacent, apathy, then we have a problem. We have a problem. Notice verse 11 here. It says, "They, people of the lifestyle, have now compassed us in our steps. They have set their eyes bowing down to earth, all the material glitz and glamour the world has to offer. And I think right here sometimes is where we become envious of sinners. Envious of sinners. We look at others and we say, well, they seem to have a functional lifestyle, and they're not even Christian. Well, they seem to have a happy marriage, and I'm struggling to make mine work. And they're not even calling themselves Christians. They're successful, and here I am struggling to make ends meet. Envious of the sinner, people of the lifestyle. Look at Psalm 73. Keep your place here. We'll come back to it. But in Psalm 73 and verse 7, we'll come back to this scripture in just a second. It says, their eyes stand out with fatness. They have more than their heart could wish. They are corrupt and speak wickedly concerning oppression. They speak lofty. They set their mouth against heaven, and their tongues walketh through the earth. Therefore his people return hither, and water of a full cup are wrung out to them. They have said, how does God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are ungodly, who prosper in the world, they increase in riches. And sometimes these are the ones that we can become envious of. Because we look at others and we think, hey, my life should be better than this. Notice what David says. Verily, have I cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence? In other words, am I doing all this for nothing, the Christian life, living the Christian life? Is it a vain thing for me to do this? For all the day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning. In other words, life for the Christian is not always a bed of roses. That was the first thing Henry said to me when I was baptized. He said, I can't promise you a bed of roses. I thought, I'm looking for a bed of roses. What do you mean you can't promise me a bed of roses? This is what I want. I'm one of the people of the lifestyle here. You can't promise me a bed of roses? Notice what it says. It says in verse 16, when I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. Until I went into your sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. Surely you did set them in slippery places. You casted them down into destruction. How are they brought into desolation, as in a moment they are utterly consumed with terror? Making the comparison between himself and people of the lifestyle. When the bottom falls out, where are you going to go if you don't have God? And all you've got is a lifestyle. What do you put your trust in when your hope in this world is shattered? All gone. All of the things we want, all the toys, everything. People of the lifestyle. The lifestyle is no more. What happens when lifestyle is gone? You know what? Lifestyle offers us a false sense of stability. It's just an illusion. It's just an illusion. Back in Psalm 17 and verse 11, let's finish up there and we'll close out. It says, they, people of the lifestyle, have now compassed us in our step. They have set their eyes bowing down to the earth, like a lion that is greedy of his prey, and as it were a young lion lurking in secret places. Arise, O Lord, disappoint him, cast him down, deliver my soul from the wicked, which is thy sword, from men which are thy hand, O Lord, from men of the world, which have their portion in this life. Notice the distinction. From men of the world which have their portion in this life, and whose belly you fill with hid treasure, they are full of children and lead the rest of their substance to their babies. Yes, there are people of the lifestyle who bow down to this earth, who have this world's treasures. They have children and grandchildren, and they seem to live a normal, functional life. You know, just recently I heard on the Associated Press, it sort of describes people of the lifestyle. There were people leaving pet funds for their pets. One woman decided to leave $12 million to her dog so he could live out the rest of his life in luxury. People of the lifestyle. An estate lawyer in New York who specializes in pet trust said, the idea is not so crazy. People really think they're pets as babies. Her clients more commonly leave $5,000, $10,000, although she had one who set aside $5 million. People of the lifestyle. You know, I don't understand it. I have a cat, and I'm praying that the thing will die. I mean, it's just, it throws up on the carpet. I asked Teresa, I said, how long do cats live? They really do live 9 lives, I believe. This thing is never going to kick the bucket. And it was a strange thing about the lifestyle concept. I was at a cemetery just recently, locally, and there was a tombstone there, a unique tombstone. It was all fixed up, the carvings. It was a guy who had I forget how he passed away, but on a tombstone he had a picture of his Harley carved out. Harley Davidson. I like Harley Davidson, but I'm not going to have one on my tombstone. I can guarantee you that. He had his truck, a picture of his truck, engraved on the tombstone. He had little icons down here, Dale Earnhardt car. He loved Dale Earnhardt. This is a picture. This is what I'm perceiving by looking at this one tombstone. He had another little deer icon. I thought he loves to hunt. He had also engraved was a gun. He loved guns, I guess, hunting, shooting, whatever. And I thought, you know, here's a guy. He's obviously a person of lifestyle. And he goes to his grave as a man, as one of the people of the lifestyle. He lived a life and he died as one of those people of the lifestyle. Verse 15, the conclusion. As for me, David says, I will behold your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with your likeness. What he's able to see is that time when we're going to be given new bodies in the kingdom of God. And what he understood was that the character is being built right now to go into those new bodies. And one of the greatest deterrents that keeps us from building that character can be lifestyle. Someone once said that the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt, all they could take with them was what they could carry on their back. And maybe some of them had a mule or a wagon, but for the most part, and Egypt is a type of sin, all they could carry out of Egypt was what they could carry on their back. Now, at baptism, we came out of Egypt, out of sin. And we have a cargo load of vans as far as you can see. And we're still carrying it all. Lifestyle. I think some of us need to unload, lighten our backpack, shed some responsibility. One more verse in closing. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 26. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 26. It says, 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 26, for you see your calling, brethren. Now, I'd like to stop here and make a distinction. Just like David did between himself and people of the lifestyle, he made a clear distinction between being a Christian and people who bow down themselves to the earth, people of the lifestyle. He makes a distinction. Here's the distinction I want to make. For those of you who see your calling, you know that God has called you. You see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And base things of the world, and things which are despised, has God chosen. Yea, and things which are not, to bring to naught the things that are. And he did it this way, that no flesh should glory in his presence. You see your calling. And I hope what you see now is a choice that I think sooner or later we all have to make between lifestyle or your calling.